gorgeous. It is my great honor and joy to introduce our guest speaker today. He has already blessed us this morning at the 9 o'clock service and touched our hearts in a very profound way. A very wise individual whose wisdom has been hard-earned, I would say. So let me tell you a little bit about him. Paul K. Chappell graduated from West Point in 2002. He was deployed to Iraq and left active duty in November 2009 as a captain. He is the author of the Road to Peace series, a 7-book series about waging peace, ending war, the art of living, and what it means to be human. The first 5 published books in this series are Will War Ever End?, The End of War, Peaceful Revolution, The Art of Waging Peace, and The Cosmic Ocean. Chappell serves as the Peace Leadership Director for the Nuclear Age Peace Foundation. Lecturing across the country and internationally, he also teaches courses and workshops in peace leadership. He grew up in Alabama, the son of a half-black, half-white father who fought in the Korean and Vietnamese wars, and a Korean mother. Growing up in a violent household, Chappell has sought answers to the issues of war and peace, rage and trauma, purpose and hope. You can find more out about him at his website, peacefulrevolution.com. Please join me in offering a very warm Unity Renaissance welcome to our guest speaker, Paul K. Chappell.
Looks like it's about to come out there. There we go.
Thank you for having me. I'm very grateful to be able to speak with all of you today. So today I want to offer 5 things you can do in your life to create more peace in your personal life, in your family, in your relationships, in your community, in your workplace, and around the world. So to talk about these 5 things you can do to create more peace, I have to first tell a story. So I have one friend I still talk to from high school. He and I went to high school in Alabama. He still lives in Alabama, and I went to visit him a few summers ago in Alabama where he still lives. So I arrived there on a Friday evening. Him and his friends wanted to go out drinking that evening. I don't drink any alcohol, but I went out with them anyway just to be social. And at around 2 in the morning, they all wanted to go to a Waffle House. Everybody was drunk in Alabama. That's where drunk people go at 2 in the morning when they're hungry. So we go to this Waffle House at 2 in the morning. I'm probably the only person at the Waffle House who isn't drunk other than the workers. And there's a guy in a corner screaming at this waitress. He's screaming at this waitress because she just brought him his food, and he has a dirty fork. And he's screaming at her, my fork's dirty, give me a clean fork, I want a clean fork. She doesn't have a clean fork for him immediately, so he walks across the Waffle House, takes my fork out right in front of me, goes back, sits down, starts eating. So I'm looking at the menu. I haven't ordered my food yet. The waitress saw what happened. Within 30 seconds, she gave me a brand new fork, so I'm not too worried about it. So my friend's friend is sitting next to me, and he gets really, really angry. He goes, "That guy just took your fork." And I go, "Yeah, but now he has a fork, I have a fork, everybody has forks. Everything's fine." So my friend's friend is getting angrier. I said, "Look, I appreciate you trying to defend my honor, but the guy didn't take my wallet. If he took my wallet, I'd have to get my wallet back. And what he did was wrong. He shouldn't have taken my fork, but he's really drunk. And when people are drunk, they make bad decisions, and you can't reason with them. So he's over there minding his own business. He's really drunk. He didn't take my wallet. I think we should just leave him alone." So my friend's friend is getting angrier. Finally, he goes, "I'm not going to take this." He starts screaming in the guy's face. He goes, finds not listening disrespectful. Think of it like this. In all of human history, I don't think anyone has ever seriously said, "I hate it when people listen to me. I can't stand it when people listen to me." Nobody ever says, "Me and my spouse have to go to marriage counseling. My spouse listens to me all the time. I can't take it anymore." Raise your hand if you hate it when people listen to you. Raise your hand Raise your hand if you don't like to be listened to. Every human on the planet likes to be listened to. Now, the key to listening is empathy. If you don't have empathy for people, you can't really hear what they're saying. If you don't have empathy for people, you can hear their words, but you can't hear their hopes, you can't hear their fears, you can't hear their humanity. So the key to listening is empathy. So the first thing we can do to create more peace is listening with empathy, which is universally respectful in all cultures throughout human history, because it's part of the human condition and it's part of our shared humanity. The second thing we can do is the second element of universal respect. I have to tell a quick story to talk about this. The second element of universal respect is leading by example and not being hypocritical. So there's a very famous story of Gandhi, where a woman came to Gandhi and she said, "Gandhi, please help me. My son won't stop eating sugar. Gandhi, please help me. My son won't stop eating sugar." Gandhi told the woman, he said, "Take your son home and bring him back to me 8 days later." So the woman took her son home, brought him back to Gandhi 8 days later, and Gandhi said, "Stop eating sugar." And the woman was very confused. She said, "Gandhi, why did you make me go through all that trouble to take my son home and bring him back 8 days later? Why didn't you just tell him 8 days ago to stop eating sugar?" And Gandhi said, "Because 8 days ago I was still eating sugar." Right? So leading by example, if you're working for a manager or a boss and you're late to work one day and your boss chews you out, what if your boss is late to work every day? What if your boss gives you a lecture on being honest and your boss is the most dishonest person that you know? You're going to perceive it as disrespectful. You're going to say, "Who does this person think they are to lecture me about honesty or to tell me to be on time?" Now, if the person leads by example, if they're on time, if they are honest, you interpret the behavior when they talk to you much, much differently. And every culture finds hypocrisy disrespectful. This is what Jesus says in the Bible. Jesus talks about the hypocrite, the man who has a plank in his eye and criticizes the man who has a speck in his eye. And Jesus says, first take the plank out of your own eye, and then you can help your brother remove the speck from his eye. And Buddha said that ignoring our own flaws and emphasizing the flaws of others magnifies our flaws. So leading by example, not being hypocritical, this causes conflict at the personal level, also at the international level. The greatest danger to American national security is the hypocrisy of American foreign policy. And hypocrisy on the international level also causes a lot of conflict and danger. And leading by example, avoiding hypocrisy, helps create peace. The third element of universal respect is speaking to people's potential, talking to people as if they have worth. Not talking to people like they're worthless or like they're trash. So I learned a very simple two-step technique in the Army of how to talk to people's potential and how to speak to them as if they have worth. And what that two-step process is if a soldier were late to work or if a soldier had a problem or made a mistake, I ask two simple questions. The first question I ask is, "What happened? Tell me what happened." So if a soldier shows up late to work, I just ask, "What happened?" Hear their side of the story. They might have a good reason. Maybe they had a family emergency. Rather than just jumping all over the person and attacking the person, "What happened?" The second step is you say, "What are you going to do to make sure it doesn't happen again?" So you empower them to think critically, and if they don't know how to prevent it from happening again, you offer guidance. But in this way, you're speaking to their reason and to their sense of responsibility, and you're speaking to their potential. So the fourth thing we can do to supplement that is it's very important that we give people the benefit of the doubt. Whenever we have conflict, keep in mind, most human conflict is caused by people feeling disrespected. Most disrespect is caused by misunderstanding and miscommunication. So if you feel that somebody has disrespected you, rather than just jumping all over the person, give the person the benefit of the doubt and ask for clarification. Talk to the person. Don't just assume that they're intentionally trying to disrespect you, because most disrespect is caused by misunderstanding and miscommunication. So what you do when you give people the benefit of the doubt is you're not acting from a position of ignorance. You're gathering more information, and you're not acting from a position of ignorance. And just by giving people the benefit of the doubt, so many conflicts can be avoided, and so many conflicts that do arise can be resolved more effectively. The fifth thing we can do, the last thing I'll talk about today, in terms of making the world more peaceful and making our own lives more peaceful, is we have to get training. If you think about any art form, people realize you have to get training. If people want to play basketball well, if they want to play baseball well, if they want to play an instrument, if they want to be a filmmaker, if they want to be a good cook, if they want to do any skill, any art form well, people realize they have to get training. So why is peace and waging peace the only art form where people think that they don't have to know anything, right? People think I can just show up to a protest, write something in the sign, and I'm going to be effective, I'm going to change the world. Why doesn't peace and waging peace require at least as much training as basketball or playing the violin or filmmaking or cooking? If you had a basketball game and nobody was taught how to play basketball, it'd be a mess. And people would say, of course it's a mess. No one knows how to play basketball. If you had an orchestra play Beethoven's Ninth Symphony and no one was ever taught how to play their instruments, it would be a mess. And people would say, obviously it's a mess. So we live in a world where people are not trained in peace. People are not trained in how to wage peace. Why should we be surprised that there's so many problems in the world, in our country, and in people's communities when we aren't even taught these basic peace skills? All the things I talked about so far today, I was never taught in school. What if everybody were taught these things? What if we spent as much time teaching people peace as math? Math is certainly important. I went all the way through calculus too, but I never even use math anymore, right? Beyond elementary school math. But these peace skills, people use these and need to use these multiple times a day with their families, with strangers, with coworkers, with the person behind the checkout counter they might have. Feel the person is being rude to them. And think about workplaces, how many problems are caused in workplaces by disrespect, sexual harassment, bullying, and how these skills are also essential in the workplace. Also, in terms of creating a healthy democracy, and we need these skills to survive as a species in the 21st century as well. So when I was in the Army, I saw how people have excellent training in how to wage war. But most people have no training in how to wage peace. So what if people were as well trained in how to wage peace as soldiers are in how to wage war? Think about how different the world would be if we recognized that waging peace requires as much training as warfare or basketball or playing an instrument or any art form, and that waging peace is actually a more complex art form than waging war, because waging peace tries to solve the root causes of our problems. So those are the five things you can do. We'll be doing a two-hour workshop this afternoon about training and waging peace. So another thing you can do is come to the workshop. But if you would like to learn more about the skills of waging peace, the techniques of waging peace, how we can practically and effectively create peace, how we can get this training, we'll have a two-hour workshop at 1 o'clock. And just to reiterate what we covered, the five things you can do are get training in waging peace, give people the benefit of the doubt, speak to people's potential, speak to people as if they have worth, lead by example, don't be hypocritical, and whenever you see a fork, think about the importance of respect. Thank you.
I think we have a little bit of extra time, so does anyone have a question they'd like to ask? Yes, Paul is willing to take them for a few moments. Into the mic, please. Is that on? There you go.
I know you were recently at Quantico. Who did you speak to at Quantico? And what? Of course, I know what you spoke about, but who did you speak to?
I spoke at the high school at Quantico Marine Base, and I spoke to the 8th through 12th graders. The 8th through 12th graders at the assembly. So, about peace.
About peace.
I think you are marvelous. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Have you considered talking to the police departments? I think I just think what you say, it sounds so simple, but it's so powerful. I think if we all applied that in or out of uniform, old or young, what a beautiful world we would be in.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, thank you very much. I enjoyed that. I'm a therapist, and I work every day with the skills you're talking about. And I'm wondering, how can we teach, I've been wondering myself, a narcissist, a person who's a total narcissist, to want to do this?
Oh.
That's a pertinent question.
Oh, sure. I think narcissists typically have trauma issues, and the key to dealing with narcissism is preventing the root causes of trauma in our society and giving people tools to heal trauma. But typically people who have narcissistic behaviors, they have typically childhood trauma. And I think we need a better grasp of trauma and how to heal trauma. This afternoon I talk about trauma quite a bit, but I think trauma is the untalked about epidemic in our society. And it's really the root cause of so many of our problems, and it's not talked about.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Hi, my name is Barbara Harris, and I am a brown belt in Taekwondo.
Oh.
And one of the things that my master teacher taught us was the greatest weapon that a person has is not their hands or feet, it is their mind. Talking through conflict is the best way to resolve conflicts as opposed to beating the other person to a pulp.
Thank you. Anybody else have a question? Okay.
How did you make the transition from being in the Army to a peacemaker? What caused or led you to make that transition?
Thank you for asking.
Oh, that's a long story. So I guess the main cause was my father fought in the Korean and Vietnam Wars, and he had a lot of war trauma. So I grew up in a very violent household, and I developed a lot of behavioral problems as a child because the household I grew up in was very violent. So I got kicked out of elementary school for fighting, almost got kicked out of middle school, got suspended in high school for fighting. So my initial interest in peace was just trying to control my rage, because I just felt that if I can't figure out how to control my rage, I'm eventually going to kill somebody, just because I didn't get angry the way most people would get angry. And rage and trauma, they're really painful feelings. So my initial interest in peace was a search for inner peace. And one reason I went to West Point, the main reason is because my mother's Korean, my father's half white and half black. And my father was born in 1925, so he's born the same year as Malcolm X, 4 years before Martin Luther King Jr. So he's from the generation where he told me that military is the only place I'll have a chance, is in the Army. So being at West Point, primarily because I was a racial outcast and I felt that the military would accept me, I began to see how things that we're doing in order to resolve conflict globally, it's dealing with symptoms, and it's not dealing with the root causes, and it's making our country less safe. And I think that there are better techniques we can use to make the world safer. So the connection between inner and outer peace came when I was at West Point. And I think that most people, the vast majority of Americans, want the country to be safer, want the world to be safer. And we have to let them know that there are more effective ways to do that than through waging war.
Let's just let that settle for a few moments as we go into some time in meditation. Let's just take a moment to breathe in deeply. Close your eyes if that's comfortable for you. And then release and let go. And one more time, deep breath in. Release and let go. As we hear the truth from Paul, We feel something quicken within us. We feel that same sense of deep knowing that we experience as we read about the teachings of Jesus, the heroism of Martin Luther King Jr., Nelson Mandela, Malala, and others who have shown the courage and the wisdom and the strength to respond to hate with love. I invite you to allow yourself to connect with that well of compassion within you in this moment, letting go of any judgment, any worry, any fear. Just feel yourself awash in the consciousness of God. And in this peaceful place, I invite you to bring into your heart and mind someone who you have labeled as the other. Perhaps it's someone you fear, someone who stirs anger in you. Go to your heart. Go to your heart. And you might ask yourself, what would have had to have happened to me for me to behave that way? Allow yourself to give that person the benefit of a doubt, and to know there's more to the story than we know. I invite you to connect with the love of God within you and allow it to spread from within you out to this individual and out into the world in the silence. In this moment, we feel our oneness with each other, with all of life, with all of history, and all that follows from this moment. We give thanks for these words of wisdom that move us so deeply, that stir our hearts and remind us there is a better way. We are the ones. And so we step forward, affirming that we are the change we wish to see in the world. We are ready to do our part. Thank you, God. And so it is.